This is Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. Many Milwaukeeans are familiar with Samson, the beloved gorilla who lived at the Milwaukee County Zoo until he died in 1981. Now Samson lives at the Milwaukee Public Museum. Wildlife artist and world champion taxidermist Wendy Christensen made the popular recreation of Samson that's on display there. In the nearly 36 years she worked at the museum, Christensen also created hundreds of animal mounts and sculptures for various exhibits. Lake Effect's Excret Nunez speaks with Christensen about her passion for wildlife art and how she recreated Samson.
I want to take it back to the beginning. When and how did you become interested in taxidermy?
Oh, boy. I guess I've always was destined to become a taxidermist. And I know that sounds silly, but seriously, I had an interest in preserving animals from a very, very young age. I'm extremely passionate about wildlife. A lot of it started out when I was young and I would see animals hit by cars laying on the roadside. You know, I always thought, oh, gosh, what a shame. It would be so cool if I could make that animal look lifelike again.
I guess when, around when? You said you were a child, boy. So when, how old were you?
When I was 2 or 3, my mom told me I picked up a minnow out of the bait bucket. And I walked around all day petting the minnow.
Oh.
Obviously, the minnow had seen better days, but I was just that much intrigued with animals and just wanting to have them a part of my life. When I was 7, my dad, he hit a coyote, and I just thought that was such a beautiful animal. There was some way that I could preserve that. I felt helpless because I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to do anything at 7. And when I was 12, I took Northwestern School of Taxidermy, which is kind of funny because all the old-timer taxidermists is how they started. It's a correspondence course by mail. It got me started, and I sat in my basement, and I started with my pigeon. They recommend you start with a pigeon. And when I was 14, I took a mini course from a local taxidermist so I could actually see things hands-on. And he was not a great taxidermist, but it did help me. You know, it helped me pique my interest. And when I was 15, I started working for a taxidermist that ended up being the person that probably helped me more than any. Because in that time period, late 70s, early 80s, you did not have access to all the knowledge that we have today. Taxidermy was a big secret. People didn't share their processes. Like today, it's all over. You can learn from internet, you can YouTube, you can get books, you can get video. Back then, there was only a couple of books.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing is you kind of worked your way up to work at the Milwaukee Public Museum. How do you even approach working with such unique animals?
A lot of research. So if you wanted to mount a deer, say an example, there are all kinds of commercially available mannequins. A mannequin is what the skin gets glued and sewed and mounted over. And the mannequins are catalogs of books that you can pick different sizes, different poses. And as an artist myself, I make some of those. They're all hand sculpted,
Wow. Those
mannequins. But when you're doing something like an ocelot or a jaguar, those are not commercially available mannequins, or monkeys, primates. So you have to learn how to make them 100% yourself.
So you have to learn the measurements of that animal.
Yes, you have to learn the anatomy and the structure and what makes that animal, the essence of that animal, as I like to say. And that's where the study part is involved. Even though, you know, musculature is similar on every animal, it's still slightly different.
Right. You really have an eye for detail. And you were talking about how you've sculpted horses, gorillas. How long does it take to work on a project like that, a large project like that?
A large project. Okay. In the case of the gorilla, I'm assuming you're referring to Samson. In order to do him, that required a lot of research on what made him unique to himself, too. Not just a gorilla, but I had to capture Samson's personality and Samson's expression. So I did a lot of research on that. And so the research part takes, and the same with like the horses you referred to, those are King Tut's horses. They're ancient Arabians. I spent probably a couple of months doing research on what made ancient Arabians of that time different than our modern Arabians. Mm. To answer a very long story here, trying to make it a little shorter here, Samson took a year approximately, but it was because I was actually on display in the public making Samson. They wanted me to make him in front of the public. The museum did. So even though that is something I probably could have done in a little much quicker time fashion, the whole exhibit was up for a year. So they wanted me to work on them while I was down there. So I worked a couple hours a day, putting a few hairs in here and talking to people and putting a few hairs in there. So that was probably about a year. When it came to the horses, now the first one took me a lot longer because of all the research. And so I think he took 8 months. And then the second one was like 5 months, something like that. It went a lot faster. But it's all painstakingly, you know, hand sculpted everything. And yeah, some of those projects are long term. And then like when I did all the mammals for the rainforest, I think I did 43 animals in a year and a half. So it just depended on the time frame too, and if we had a time restraint, and then how many specimens I had to do.
So I guess, can you walk me through the process of research is already a big part. Sculpting it is a huge part.
Yes.
But then you said hairs one by one.
Oh, okay. Well, in the case of Samson, he is 100% artificial. The Samson on display at the museum is called a recreation. And the reason he is a recreation is his skin was not mountable. So he died in 1981. There was a taxidermist that was hired to mount him for the zoo. So that gentleman came out and he skinned Samson and he made a death mask of Samson. And then Samson's skin sat in his freezer for 3 or 4 years. And then eventually the zoo relinquished him to the museum. So I went to flesh it and prepare it for tanning and all the process that's required. And his skin was what we call slipping, which means the outer layer of epidermis was peeling off in large pieces with the hair. So that made him unmountable. So I saved his skin because it was very valuable scientifically, because he was a wild captured gorilla. So his DNA and everything could be, you know, used for research. And then when it came to making the recreation, we had a president at the time of the museum that I had proposed the idea of making this recreation. He said, I like it and I want you to do it in front of the public. So we started out the first messy stages of the process were up in my studio with a webcam on me. So you could log in from home and watch me actually making him in my studio. Then we took him downstairs and put him on display, or me making him on display, and built a whole exhibit about gorillas all around it. It was very, very popular and really a cool exhibit. So we had his skeleton, okay. And Samson was one of the largest gorillas ever in captivity. So there is a company by the name of Bone Clones that makes artificial casts of things. So they had an extra large male gorilla that I purchased, the skeleton. It's made of plastic. And then looking at his real bones, I lengthened each one of the bones to make it Samson-sized. So from that bone structure, I then bulked up all the muscles and all the body anatomy using two-part foam that you mix together, it expands and it hardens quite hard. And then I carve it. Now, that's his body. When it came to his face, I took that death mask that the other taxidermist had made and I completely retooled it. Because when you have a death mask, a cast of a dead animal, that's exactly what it is, a dead animal. So you don't have any muscle tone, you don't have blood pressure, you don't have expression. So I had to put all of that life back into it. It was very critical that I make those eyes. If those people that knew Samson, he always looked at you out of the corner of his eyes in disgust. It's just kind of funny. He had an attitude, and people loved his attitude. So I had to capture that. So then I worked on getting the eye set right. So when it came to making his hair in that, I implanted the hairs one hair at a time from the back of his nape of his neck all the way down to his chest. Because Samson's skin was saved, I sent 6 different parts of his hair, of his body, to a company that makes the hair for Hollywood, for the movie industry.
Whoa.
Yeah, and they matched it. They made it. They did the best job they could using, this took us back and forth like 5 months to get the right blends. And so the hair is made out of acrylic, yak hair, and goat hair. And then the hands and feet and the chest, I took casts of actual like gorilla skin and I made stamps kind of. And I stamped all the skin texture into the hands and the chest and everything. So it's a long story, but basically that's how I made him.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
How do you decide how you'll pose an animal or the story you want to convey?
If it were for a client, what the client would like, that's first and foremost. And I oftentimes, you know, make suggestions. Sometimes people will say, just take it and do whatever you want with it. You know, I trust you. Sometimes it's something that you want to show us something specific off. And here's an example. This isn't my freelance work, but in the museum in the rainforest, we have a jaguar that I've mounted, and the jaguar is kind of on a crouching pose. And the reason it's in a crouching pose relates to a story you just did about the zoo animals and what they do with them. And that particular jaguar was one that died at the zoo, and it had had a necropsy done on it. So its entire belly was shaved. Mm-hmm. So in order to mount it, I needed to put it in a pose that hid that belly.
Wow.
So, I mean, things like that will dictate the pose.
And when I'm thinking of Samson, how you were saying, like, the expressive face, mm-hmm. I'm sure you were looking at a lot of photos of him.
Yes, and thank you for mentioning that. So when I was doing Samson on display, I was so fortunate to have Sam LaMalfa with me. Sam LaMalfa was the zookeeper at the zoo in Samson's last 10 years of his life. And Sam retired from the zoo, and he became a docent at the museum. So Sam had all these fantastic photographs, and he was sitting on the table next to me. I'm making Samson, and Sam is telling stories because people wanted to know, you know, they wanted to swap their Samson stories. So Sam was right there and able to interact with the public, but he was very helpful to me. I could bounce questions off of him. Does this look right? Does this look? Did Samson do this? Did he? And so that was really helpful.
You had someone that worked directly
yes.
with Samson. That's
yeah.
amazing. So you left the Milwaukee Public Museum in 2018 and started focusing on more freelance projects. So mm-hmm. what work are you mostly doing now?
So I've done a little bit of museum work, some contract work, some habitats, and doing some diorama work. I've been sculpting a lot of antlers. I think that's something that I really enjoy. I can do it in my basement and take my time and make, you know, very realistic antlers. Say you have a very large set of deer antlers that you shot or somebody shot, and it is destroyed in a fire, or it's lost and somebody stole it. I can take your measurements and photographs if you have, and many hunters do have the measurements and the photographs of their trophy deer or whatever animal, and I can sculpt your deer. It's all hand sculpted, but I like to do that kind of stuff. I like to repair antlers, like if they are broken from fighting or whatever, I can rebuild a whole side and to match the other side. And I think I enjoy those little putsy things like that that are ultra high detail.
Before we wrap up, I want to ask, do you have any advice for people who might be interested in becoming a taxidermist or getting into this
You
art?
Would be surprised how many ladies, I don't know how to explain it, but it's very popular, especially with ladies now, to do novelty taxidermy, things like that. Soft mount taxidermy is something that's really coming of age now, which soft mount taxidermy are posable animals. And there's some of them are really, really amazingly realistic. They're really well done. Don't try to get into the museum world. I am 100% serious because there really is, unless you're going to do contract work through a big company or something like that, there are really not any more full-time museum taxidermists. There's only one that I know of left. And he was my counterpart in the LA County Museum. And I think he's still there. And it's sad, it's in the United States, it's that way. In Europe, every university has a taxidermist, every one. And they're much ahead of us as far as their desire to have taxidermists on staff.
Yeah, can you tell me a little bit about why?
I don't know 100% either. It's just in the day and age where budget cuts happen and they hire it out, they contract it out, I suppose. I'm guessing that's probably why.
Mm. Well, I think taxidermy is a true art, and
I do too. I love it.
Well, Wendy, thank you so much for speaking with me today and telling me more about your amazing and extensive career in being a taxidermist.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Wendy Christensen is a wildlife artist and world champion taxidermist. She spoke with Lake Effect's Excret Nunez.